This is News in No Time. Tony Cox in for Farai today. On today's roundtable, we remember James Brown and an airline experiment and lets passengers use cell phones in flight. John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow in Public Policy, joins us from Manhattan. John, nice to have you.
Thank you.
E.R. Shipp, Professor in Journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication, is in Atlanta today. E.R., how are you?
Hello, how are you?
And Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle, is in Nashville. Jeff, nice to have you as well.
Always good to be here, Tony.
So, you know, we had two major deaths this week. Former President Gerald Ford, whose place in history is marked by the aftermath of the Watergate scandal, and on Christmas Day, James Brown, whose place in history is marked by, well, by this.
Wow! I feel good.
A viewing of his body is scheduled tomorrow at Harlem's Apollo Theater, where Brown had his first big gig, and the Reverend Al Sharpton will lead a public memorial on Saturday at the James Brown Arena in Augusta. Now, I'm going to bring all three of you in to talk about James Brown and some of your own personal thoughts and reflections, but I thought you might find this interesting. The song that we just heard, I Got You, was a big hit for him. But he appeared on an NPR show recently and talked about how that song was originally, now get this, originally a jazz tune, and he converted it into a dance number. Here's James Brown.
Ow, I feel good. And that's two different kind of things. See, that's the one is jazz because sharp mixes, and the other one is kind of laid back. And gave you a little rock and roll feeling at that time as well. We went with the laid-back cut because that fit the street and fit the dances. A good thing I could dance because by being able to dance, I could really tell that the new arrangement, the new concept I had for it really fell right in place.
Jeff Obafemi Carr, a good thing he could dance, huh?
Oh, it's a fabulous thing. I'm so excited he could dance. But the good thing about James, though, James understood the power of music. And I think that's one of the things that makes him very much a cultural head of state. And that is that James hit a vein that connected with people. Everybody has some kind of song that connects with James Brown. And I think about my mom's generation, people who are into their 70s, my generation's people, people who are into their 30s, and my daughter, who's not even into her teens. You can throw on certain songs and all three of us will sing along. Mm-hmm. And James never learned to read music, but understood the power and the connection. So he put together a band that very much had a background in jazz, particularly like Duke Ellington did in musical theory. And he just really laid down some grooves that not only spoke to the heart and soul of him, Soul Brother number one, but the heart and soul of America, especially during the 60s and 70s when his voice was a fixture in popular culture and what it meant to be proud to be black.
Absolutely. The hardest working man in show business. E.R., what's it been like down in Atlanta?
Well, it's the big story here, here and in Augusta, which was his hometown. He actually died in Atlanta. But people here are just in tears, literally. When they're being interviewed on the streets, they're just breaking down because they couldn't believe that he's dead. Also, people didn't have any real warning that he was ill, so it was that shock coming here, too. But I have a funny James Brown story. When I was teaching at Columbia University, I really didn't like putting on the cap and gown and going to graduations. So I decided I would stay in my office and clean it a bit while my students were graduating. Then I would join them and their parents at the reception. Well, I'm in there playing James Brown music at the highest volume, screaming at Columbia University, I feel good. And I look up in the doorway, and there were all these parents of my students looking at me. Who is this idiot?
That's a funny story. So, Mr. McWhorter, what are your thoughts, or what do you remember most, or what affects you about James Brown?
Well, besides the things that have already been said, I think that the key to this whole tribute has been when he was actually singing the song in the clip that we just heard. And nowadays that you can download exactly what we're doing on the internet. It's interesting to listen to the way he sang it And he did it very slowly, and yet you could still hear the powerful rhythm behind it, which showed that the music that he did had a kind of complexity that's easy to miss. You know, he was fun to watch, and he was fun to listen to, and he was clearly an interesting person. But the music that he made in many ways with its rhythms was as complex in that way as the sort of thing that you look for in an Ellington. And I also like the fact that he did have a social conscience and that the music was embraced, despite the fact that it had, even though a message that was realistic, it was positive. And in terms of the term African-American, which, to be perfectly honest, I don't like and try very hard not to use, although I slip sometimes, I think Black American is better. Imagine saying something like, you know, I'm African-American and I'm proud. Think about it. Say it loud. I'm African American. I'm proud. You notice how that doesn't work? That's why black is better.
And he made it comfortable for us to say black. Remember, we were struggling with not only whether you could wear the Afro in public schools, or we were struggling with the word black, whether that still was a word that was negative.
That's
so he kind of made that a popular thing for us.
Let me ask you three of you one more thing about James Brown before we move on. Do you think that the public is going to remember him primarily for his music, for his dancing, for his, you know, his hair and his shows, as opposed to some of the other things that he was involved in politically? And, you know, he supported Richard Nixon at one point. He had some troubles with the law. There was a period of time between the, I guess, 70s and 80s when he was a little passé, but he kind of came back. How do you think he's ultimately going to be looked at?
Well, I think James is going to be remembered for all of that and be remembered to be a complex individual with many layers. And I think that's the best legacy anybody could want, is to be remembered from a lot of different perspectives for a lot of different things. I think he'll be remembered for the pride that's in Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. I think he'll be remembered for the parental kind of guidance that I've used when my daughter was 1 or 2 years old and we were playing Papa Don't Take No Mess, and she had to memorize that. So I think that these things will all contribute to the legacy of someone that has influenced everything from R&B and gospel to even hip-hop.
He's also set in stone, I think, for the mainstream by one thing, and it's the Blues Brothers. That is a classic movie.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody has seen that appearance. I think that was part of his revival. And it was a fantastic appearance, and that alone will definitely help. And it's interesting about the Nixon part, because I think that that's going to be largely a footnote. When Sammy Davis Jr. supported Nixon, first of all, there was an emblematic photograph, and Sammy Davis Jr. had some serious racial identity problems, and so everybody jumped on him. But nobody's ever questioned whether James Brown liked what color he was, and so I think he got past the Nixon thing in a way that many entertainers couldn't have.
Yeah, you get the last word on James Brown.
Okay, one of his legacies we're already seeing, Reverend Al Sharpton said that he promised James Brown he would wear a hairdo in his honor, and that's what he's been doing for about 30 years. And he said he's going to continue to wear that hairdo, even though it looks like he's got less hair now to do a pompadour with.
Well, James Brown, he was one of a kind. I don't know that we'll ever see another like him. All right, if you're just joining us, you're listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox, sitting in for Farai Tudeh, and this is The Roundtable. With me today, E.R. Shipp, professor in journalism, Hofstra University School of Communication, John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy, and Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle. Let's move on to another topic. This one's kind of interesting. When we talked about it in our production meeting about whether to bring it to you, and we thought that we would. Samuel Jackson said in a movie one time that he was sick of the snakes on a plane. And, you know, he went out and made a movie about snakes on a plane. But very well, we all may be screaming about cell phones on a plane, because regardless of what you think, it is coming in January. As a matter of fact, Emirates Airline will become the first carrier to allow cell phone use on board. You know, I've been thinking about this, Jeff, and I don't know if I like it or don't like it. My gut tells me that I'm not going to like this.
Well, I'm a tweener on this, because personally, the time that I'm flying might be the one time that my cell phone is not on, and it ends up being a time of relaxation. However, if I did have the opportunity to use it, would I? especially when we're talking about expanding it further digitally into the internet usage. And if I say you give me access to the internet on an airplane, would I use it? Of course. I think many of us would, because we're just addicted to technology like that. And the world is continuing to grow smaller and more wired every day. It's only a matter of time before we have wires not only on the ground, but also in the atmosphere that are accessible to the general public. So cell phone usage and internet access are eventually just going to become another appurtenance of basic air travel. And with broadband technology now emerging and even exploding on the scene, you can have access everywhere from the car to the cafe. So it only makes sense that it's going to eventually get to the airplanes once they answer the security question.
Yeah, but Jeff, exploding is a bad word.
Well, yeah, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. That is a bad word. Absolutely.
It was not apropos.
Because one of the things that we're concerned about is the safety element and whether cell phones can be used to trigger various terrorist attacks. We've been hearing that since 9/11 practically. So this now is one of those kind of scary areas. The FAA is going to issue a report, I believe, at the end of this month, looking at whether those safety issues are real or not, and then decide whether American carriers can have the option of hooking us up with cell phones and internet.
Well, you know, go ahead, John.
I absolutely dread this. This is where I become old. I've been dreading when people could use those darn phones on planes, and I don't really mean to say darn, since about 2000. Because if you think about what it's really going to be like, the reason that most people read on airplanes now is because it's all that you can do. But reading is a highly artificial and strenuous activity that most human beings in the world do not particularly like. And when you can actually talk on the phone instead of reading in those little tubes, we are going to be sitting there in our seats where every third person at any time is going to be having a conversation about the fact that they're in the plane. And to be perfectly honest, I have been thinking about this for about 3 years, and when that happens, I'm going to start flying less, and it's going to interfere with my personal and my professional life, because 6 hours in a flying tube listening to people's idle conversations all around me with nothing that I can do about it, frankly, makes me shudder.
Well, you know, that's
so
sort
what
of way
transportation will you take?
Yeah, I'm serious. I'll be doing more things from home. I'm going to get to know trains. I'm going to lead a much narrower life.
Train cell phones are already there.
Yeah, I know. They have quiet cars, but there won't be a quiet section in the plane.
But eventually, you'll choose the alternative, John, which is to get on the phone yourself. So, well, since they're having a conversation, you'll do like when you're riding in the car with four people and everybody's talking on the cell phone. It's like, well, why don't we just go get these other people and ride with them?
Hopefully, so noise-canceling headphones will get better.
Well, so, you know, as a technological advancement, it certainly makes sense, and it would certainly seem to be convenient, especially for those of us who work on planes, as all of you do, as I do. But at the same time, it's something about, I think John hit it right on the head when he said listening to people's conversation, because have you noticed that people they tend to talk louder and they tend to talk about nothing of any consequence.
And, I'm in a store.
It just drives me crazy.
Well, I think it's just the way of the world. I was in a gathering the other day, and a person was talking about the literal fight that they had to go through almost physically to get these portable DVD players, because the notion is that now you cannot travel with children in the car unless you have a portable DVD player. And I can't for the life of me think of what my parents were thinking about before that, because we went on trips and the only thing we could do was sing a few songs and play a few games and have a little family bonding time.
Child rearing is going to be easier because of that. Yeah. I never thought about that.
Let me tell you something about this, the cell phone usage and how people are so impolite. I was recently at a funeral and I swear I heard 6 cell phones go off.
Me too.
And you would have thought that when the first one rang, everybody would have checked theirs and turned them off.
Absolutely.
But that's presided one of those funerals where you had to tell people turn it off at the funeral.
Yep. And in the theater.
Or at the theater.
When I was teaching at Berkeley, it was regular in classrooms. It's everywhere now.
It is, absolutely. Well, we'll just have to keep our eyes and ears open for this development as it comes in 2007. As we bring Roundtable to a close today, you know, Monday, Christmas Day, was really hyped up as a big day because of the release of the movie Dreamgirls. For months now, cinema lovers have anticipated the release of this film starring Jamie Foxx, Golden Globe nominees Eddie Murphy, Beyoncé Knowles, Jennifer Hudson. So the box office numbers from Christmas Day are in for now, and it looks like this movie did awfully well, raking in more than $8 million, almost $9 million on Christmas Day. So here's my question to you. We've got about 2 minutes. Did you believe the hype? Did you see the movie? Did it, were you satisfied with what you saw? Or have any of you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, who did see it?
I'm trying to talk my 12-year-old nephew and my 17-year-old nephew into going with me today. That may be a losing battle because I think they're going for Rocky Balboa.
That did pretty well.
I trust say that it's very good, and so I cannot wait to get in and see it. It's high time.
I went to the movie last night, actually, and of course I had a little bit of concern because as a theater practitioner, of course, doing some of the songs and knowing the story and loving the musical, I said, is it going to really live up? It totally, totally blew me away.
Really?
I was impressed, and everybody I was with was impressed.
Were you in a black audience or a white audience?
I was in a mixed audience in a predominantly white suburb, but there was a mixed audience there, and everybody in the theater started erupting in applause at different points, and I found myself doing that too. As cool as I try to be inside a movie theater, I found myself doing the same thing. It was amazing. It's a breakout performance for Jennifer Hudson.
Let me ask you this, Jeff. This is my last thing. When Jennifer Hudson sang that song, I'm telling you, is that one of those points where you stood up and started talking to the screen?
Well, let me just show my countryism here. I had to almost ran up out of there. I'll just tell you right now, as cool and as intellectual as I'm capable of being, that's when I was ready to run out of there.
All
of us will be. Yeah, she took us there, man. She took us there.
All right. Well, Dreamgirls is out. We're going to see how it goes and how well it will do as the Oscars come along. Let me thank Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle, and John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy, and E.R. Shipp, professor in journalism, Hofstra University School of Communication. Everybody, thank you so much, and have a happy new year.
Same to you,
Tony.